Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point in Shanghai. If we're headed into the Chinese century, the hand that steers the wheel will be young Chinese students in college right now. Their generation is riding a booming economy like China hasn't seen in centuries, moving into global power like China never had, maybe, in history. This hour, On Point, we'll talk with young Chinese about how they see their country and the world now. We have three Chinese students joining us, standing in for a generation. That's a tall order, but we'll try it. Two are with me here in the studio, looking over Shanghai. Anita Wang is a sophomore at Fudan University in Shanghai, one of China's top colleges. She's majoring in electrical engineering. She grew up in Shanghai. She's 20 years old. Anita Wang, thanks very much for being here.
Hey, nice to meet you.
And with us in the studio is Henry Fu. He's in his third year of a five-year program at the Shanghai Institute of Foreign Trade. He's majoring in French and business. He hopes to eventually own his own business, importing French wine and cheese to China. He grew up in Shanghai and is also 20. Henry, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, everyone.
And with us from China's capital, Beijing, is Zhang Ying, a second-year student in a master's program in public administration at Tsinghua University, also a super elite school. She's an intern for the American bank Citigroup, where she's accepted a job in China when she graduates in July. She spent last summer in Atlanta at the Carter Center's China program. She grew up in Tianjin near Beijing. She's 24 years old. Zhang Ying in Beijing, thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, everybody.
It's really terrific to have all of you here. You know, if China's the rising power that everybody seems to think it is right now, your generation is going to be very important. And we're looking forward to getting an idea of how you think about what's going on in your country, what you think about what's going on in the world. We want to learn about your personal lives. They sound interesting. French wine and cheese and off to Atlanta already. I want to hear about your impressions there. But I want to dive right in on what the whole world has been talking about in the last few weeks, and that is the protests that have broken out around the Olympic torch and some of its different, you know, sites as it's gone to London, Paris, some in San Francisco and elsewhere. Everyone is very interested what China and the Chinese youth in this conversation think about that. Anita, what do you think about the fact that, yes, there have been people who have come out to cheer and people who have come out to applaud, and there have been overseas Chinese and others in many countries who have come out with their flags, but there's also been very vigorous protests, particularly of what happened in Tibet in recent weeks. What do you think of that?
Well, I think actually Chinese students are now a heated debate around Tibet issue was going on too. So most of the students in China, they think Tibet will always be a part of China, and they think the Dalai Lama, they made a huge mistake. But I think the Tibet issue is kind of complicated. It contains too many problems. And about the United States, some media, they did use some, well, to us, not honestly way to broadcast this news. So I think as a Chinese student, I surely think Tibet is a part of China and it will be. And I think there's no reason for people around the world to protest Olympics. For Olympics is a kind of activity for peace. So no war can.
Henry Fu, you're kind of a Francophile. You know a lot about France. You want to import French wine and cheese. In Paris, we saw some of the most kind of wild protests in the streets. With the torch went out and, you know, crowds jumping into the middle of the procession.
Yeah.
How do you see that? What do you think about it?
Actually, I have been in Tibet, so I really know that the most important thing is to get everyone know the truth. We really don't know the truth. So everyone, do you know that all the expenses of medical expenses are covered by the government in Tibet? This is not like in Shanghai and Beijing, these big cities. It's really good for them. And the expenses of education is also covered by the government.
So you see Tibet as lucky that the Chinese government is there.
Yeah, it really is.
But we've seen in the streets that a fair number of people think very differently around the world. They have a concern for Tibetan culture, for Tibetan history, for Tibetan even religion that they say has been oppressed by the Chinese presence there.
Yeah, is it a small party or a big party? I don't know. And in the history, the Tibet has been in a slavery system. So the slaves are of Tibet, they are all bad treated. And maybe the governments of the Chinese governments have saved them. And the small part, the monks, they were considered at the higher statue of the system. So they protest the government and they want independence. That's normal.
Zhang Ying, in Beijing, there have been very, very loud protests from the Chinese government there. Louder and angrier even lately. How do you see this issue? Are you on the same page as Henry and Anita here in Shanghai? Do you have a different view?
Yes, I think people around me are very frustrated by the protest in Paris and London along the Olympic torch relay. My personal view is that I think Tibet is always part and will be a part of China. And the problem is I don't see there is a strong moral value in this protest for several reasons. First, people protesting out there in Paris and London, they haven't even been to Tibet yet, and what they are protecting and what they are protesting against, I don't think they get a view of that, and I don't know why they try to protest and try to protect a slavery system. I think that's something they hold. The whole human being has been against for the last centuries.
You spent time in the United States in Atlanta at the Carter Center. Now, that was before this became a big issue. But you know that many Americans are very critical of China's human rights record. And those Americans would probably be concerned about the problems in Tibet. Did you have this kind of conversation with Americans that you spent time with?
Yes, I think so. You know, the Dalai Lama is an honorary professor at Emory University, and the Carter Center is affiliated to Emory University. We have that conversation during my internship in America, and people ask me, what's my perspective China's human rights record. Firstly, I think that's the different definition of human rights. I think for most Chinese people, they are more concerned about economic growth and better life and improvement in their living. But American students put more emphasis on political freedom or building a Western style political system in China, and they brand that as the good human record. As far as I think of this Tibetan issue, I think there's the Chinese government has every reason to keep order and law effective in Xinjiang, in Tibet. And I think I think that all the Chinese people are very supportive of the Chinese government action in Tibet. Olympic Games should be a game of harmony and peace. And I should say that it's very disappointing to kindle hatred and to kindle resentment in this peaceful event.
Zhang Ying, you mentioned that you found Americans more interested in political issues, human rights, democracy. Mm-hmm. Do you think that in your lifetime, those will be important issues for China, for the Chinese? Are they now?
Yes, I think democracy and political reform is and will be a very important part of our life in the next, next decades, for several reasons. Maybe during the 30 years of economic growth, a lot of problem has been you have a lot of problem going on and people are kind of ignore them. Now it's time to face them. Violence and maybe a overnight solution, maybe not the answer. So a graduate approach to political reform and patient and to wait for things to happen. I think that's a better approach to China's political reform.
Anita, you're at one of China's most elite universities. You know, a lot of voices around the world are being raised in protest. Do you think China has anything to learn from these protesters, from these calls for human rights, for more attention to be paid to Tibetan culture, Tibetan rights?
Yeah.
Is there anything here for China to learn?
I think...
Anita, you go first. I tell you what, we're coming up on a short break here. I have a million questions for all of you. I'm really glad to have you with us. We go out with this from this song called Invisible Wings from a very popular Taiwanese singer in China, Angela Zhang. The lyrics go more or less, I believe I can fly. There's a message from Chinese youth. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point in Shanghai. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point in Shanghai. We're talking this hour about China's rising generation, young Chinese looking out on what's being called the Chinese century. I've been joined by three young Chinese college students with me in Shanghai, Anita Wang at Fudan University, Henry Fu at the Shanghai Institute of Foreign Trade, with us from Beijing, Jiang Ying. She's a second year student in a master's program in public administration at Tsinghua University, graduates in July. She will go to work for Citigroup in China. We're joined right now as well by one of this group's elders, but just by a few years. Joy Lei Li joins us. She's worked as a producer and researcher in China for NBC News, PBS's Frontline, CNN. She studied in Tokyo. She's got a master's degree from Columbia University's School of International and Public Affairs. Joy, thanks very much for being here with us.
Thank you, Tom.
So we opened right up at the beginning asking about the Olympic torch and Tibet, and you heard the answers one after another from our young guests. You know, to many American ears, these answers will sound almost shocking. Most young people in America will have a rather different view, perhaps from the media, as Anita says, perhaps from a real understanding of what's going on. I can see at this table there would be debate about that, but there's not nearly as much debate in the United States. Should Americans be surprised, Joy, to hear young Chinese with such a undifferentiated view of what's going on in Tibet, of this very supportive view of the Chinese government's line there?
Yeah, I think, you know, it will be, for American, just like, I would say actually, for me, it's not surprising, but maybe it's surprising for American audience. But also, I think from these three young students' voice, I think some people, I think Western media, including Americans, maybe should aware such kind of protest might not be productive. It only, you know, make Chinese people more defensive.
We have three young guests with us in this hour. If we went out and got 3,000 in comparable positions, let's say college students in China, do you think their views would be similar?
I think more same. You know, as you can tell from the internet, we have those blogs, anti-CNN, anti-BBC.
Anti-CNN, anti-BBC.
And anti... So they just... not only about that, but also if you go to the some chat room and the discussion forum, there's so many messages says, you know, we're going to for China. They feel the Western media, American, you know, audience are brainwashed by Western media. Mm. They should understand more about the complexity of the Tibet issue.
Let's broaden this conversation a little bit, if we may, Henry and Anita and Jiang Ying in Beijing. You know, I think part of the reasons that this will be surprising to a lot of Americans is the last really strong image from China of Chinese students, of Chinese youth, that made a huge and lasting impression on many Americans came from 1989, perhaps even before, nearly before you were born, almost. And the student protests at Tiananmen Square. We saw on TV day after day students raising banners for democracy, and ultimately we saw a very harsh crackdown there. Is that incident part of your education? Are you taught about it in school? Do you talk about it among yourselves as students, Anita?
You mean the protests before the Tiananmen Square?
Mm-hmm. And the crackdown there, June 4th, 1989.
Well, in my school year, we seldom talk about this.
Seldom?
Yeah.
Do you know about it at all? Have you learned about it from your parents or friends or from the, I don't know, books, the internet somehow or not?
Yeah, I knew this news, but we seldom talk about it now in university because now more we pay more emphasis on the Tibet issue.
Henry, how about you? Did you study it in school? Are you familiar with what happened there? Does it seem important to you?
Yeah, we know what happened, but we don't have a general idea of it.
Are you aware that in much of the world, that's still a powerful image of young Chinese students protest like that in such a public place?
I think it's normal in history for our parents told us that in the process of development of our country, the questions of democracy will appear and emerged from the bottom of the order.
From the bottom of the order, which you mean from people without power or with less power?
It is not people without power. We are in power, I think. We have what we want. And from the development of the country, we benefit a lot.
When you say we have what we want, what do you mean?
In fact, China has been invaded by Japanese army, you know, from the Second World War. Mm-hmm. And the first thing we want is the sovereignty of a country. Mm-hmm. And then independence, economics, and politics. And the third thing is we lived under the line of poverty, and then we became rich, especially the eastern cities of the country. And now the country has put more emphasis on the western districts of China.
Mm. Zhang Ying, you're there in Beijing. Tiananmen Square remains there, big and grand. The portrait of Chairman Mao still there. There's been some talk that when the Olympics go on this mm-hmm. summer, Western television crews may not be allowed to go there because it still has this resonance of democracy protest and perhaps of some fear that some Chinese might look to raise a protest there again. What about you? How do you look back on this event in your own city as a young Chinese, a student?
I think before I went to college, during my education, there are seldom discussion about this event, and there is a general comment on this event in high school. But since I major in liberal arts, and liberal arts students are very critical of this situation, and we talk a lot. We can say the truth about this event. I know that in 1989 has a really deep impression on American mindset. I went to the CNN headquarters, and the only picture I saw there about China is
in
the Tiananmen Square.
Mm-hmm.
In Atlanta, mm-hmm. yes. So I understand that when people protesting about protesting against China's human rights record, they think that maybe they are helping Chinese people. And that's how I understand mm-hmm. it. But actually, mm-hmm. the fact is Chinese people that are not supportive of their protest. And I think that's lack of communication and misunderstanding between China and other, say, European Union or American people.
Zhang Ying, let me ask you, why do you think Chinese students in 1989 were prepared to even die for democracy. And today we're hearing such a different perspective, such a different view. What has changed in the years between then and now?
I think the whole 80s is very different. The young people are on the circle of public concern. As a public management major, we learned that the people has their concern has a circle, and people shift from public concern circle to a private concern circle. I just say that in the 80s, people are more on a public concern circle, and I think that's maybe that's a result from the culture revolution. After the Cultural Revolution, people are released from the repression for 10 years. And actually, I think that young people are very vocal about political change, and the ideological development was very active at that time.
Zhang Ying, you're a member of the Communist Party. Now, of course, not everyone is. Why did you choose to join? I'm just curious.
Before I joined the party, I understand the party as a group of a group of elite in China. And if you are devoted to the whole process of China's development, and I think it's understandable that you devote yourself to the party and to the cause of building China. Being a party member now does not mean that you are totally supportive of the communism idea or
Are you supportive at all of the communist idea?
I think it's scientific, but at some point of time.
Well, China's a market economy now.
Yes. Yes. At some point, the theory of Marxism and the theory of communism has a scientific aspect. That's the development of the society, and you see the driving force of the society. I think that part is very scientific. But on the other hand,
to many foreigners, it looks like it's primarily just a party that rules China, but not really following communist principles, at least as most of the world has understood them.
Yes, but the party, actually, if you are within the party, you will hear different voices. It's not that identical voices coming out. Within the party, more and more there are inner party democracy, and I think the Communist Party is trying to use different views within the party to balance the growth of China.
Anita, Henry, you haven't joined as far as I know. Are you thinking about it? Do you think you'll join the Communist Party or not? Is it of interest to you, or is it important? Anita?
Well, to me, because I think joining a party is something related to your belief. So I will take serious consideration before I made a decision. But I think you said from many Westerners, that's just like a party ruled China. Maybe to many Chinese, to most Chinese, it isn't a fact. Because for China now, the thing that China needed most now is a stable environment to grow economy, to grow, to develop. And I think now the party is doing a pretty good job looking for, if you say, the economic growth. So I think it's a workable policy system now to China.
Henry, you're not a member. You're looking at a career maybe in importing French wine and cheese. That depends on economic growth. Those are expensive things. I have heard people say that young Chinese people in your situations, well-educated in college, in a good situation to go forward in life, are drawn to support the Communist Party because it maintains the status quo. You've got maybe 300 million middle-class people in China. That leaves another billion not in the middle class. many of them poor, in Western China. Do you see the Communist Party as defending your livelihood, your personal economic well-being against hundreds of millions of poor Chinese who would want to, I don't know, come and take your seat in the university or something else?
I don't think so. The Chinese Communist Party has its own rules. We are obliged to devote ourselves into the development of China and to all the people of China. We are supposed to maybe sacrifice ourselves to help others. This is the principle of Communist Party. So we almost all regard the Communist Party as our party of elites and party of maybe like Democrats in USA.
But do you think that the Communist Party will ever allow not just some democracy inside the party, as Zhang Ying mentioned, but general democracy in China? Is that a good idea for China, Henry?
We don't know what will happen if China don't have Communist Party. We need stability. So
what's your fear? If China didn't have the Communist Party, what's your fear when you say we don't know what would happen?
We don't know what happened. Will we be in the control of the superpower of the world? Will we be independent in economics and politics? We don't know.
Joy, do you think, here's a generation just behind you. Henry's talking about China as a superpower, and it's going in this direction, if not fully arrived. Do you think everybody in this generation, maybe yours as well, you're 33, do you expect China to be a superpower on the same scale as the United States? Do you see it as that powerful already? How do you look at it?
Certainly, China is not as powerful as the United States. But I think it's quite difficult questions, but I do think...
But you must have some basic kind of expectation about how far China's rise will go.
Based on the current growth, I do believe China is going to continue to grow. While China really want to become a superpower or not,
It will, whether it wants to or not.
Yeah.
Anita, do you expect that? Do you expect China to become, do you see it as a superpower now? Do you expect it to become, I don't know, the most powerful nation in the world, possibly? It's the biggest country in the world.
I think to the world, China is now an emerging superpower. And I think for the globe, it's a good thing.
You say it is an emerging superpower.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the perfect situation for the globe, well, there will be three superpowers to seek such a balance.
Three,
yeah. Now, to personal view, I think it's the United States, China, and Europe.
U.S., China, and Europe.
Yeah.
We're going to have to come back and talk about, if it's three, what role you all think China will play within that balance of power, if that's where we're headed in the world. We're talking this hour about China's rising generation, you might call it, as China rises, young Chinese looking out on what's being called the Chinese century. And you can hear a very distinct and confidently held kind of view of the world. My guests, Henry Fu, Zhang Ying in Beijing, Anita Wang and Henry Fu, and Joy Lali with me here in Shanghai. Go out with another really popular song among Chinese youth. This is by superstar, Taiwanese, but superstar on the mainland, Jay Chou. It's called Blue and White Porcelain. Your smile to me is like a budding flower. Your beauty goes to a place I cannot reach. Ah, romance. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about China's rising generation from our makeshift studios on the 30th floor or so above or overlooking Nansheng Road in Shanghai, talking with young Chinese looking out on what's being called the Chinese century, about how they see their own country, how they see the world. Anita Wang is with us from Fudan University in Shanghai. Henry Fu from the Shanghai Institute of Foreign Trade. Zhang Ying is with us from Beijing. She's in Tsinghua University there, soon to join Citigroup, working for them in China. Joy Lali is with us as well. She's been helping us in China, slightly older than our college students. We value her perspective here. We were talking just before the break about Chinese power, how great it may become, and what the influence of that power may be. Henry, let me come first to you. We've had a world where for what centuries China was not a superpower.
Yeah.
Now, here you are with about one-fifth of the world's population and coming up to the table of power. So presumably, over time, that will mean some change in the world, because that's a lot of power and a lot of people coming to the table. How do you think China and its new wealth and new power will change the world?
Unlike America, I don't think China will interfere in turn affairs of other countries, for we have principles of the nation. We won't interfere in the other countries' intern affairs, unlike America.
When you say that, what do you mean? What are you referring to? Unlike America,
we see America as maybe a referee of the whole world. He is asking for the democracy of that country. He is asking for the development of this country. For us, it's an internal affairs of our country, and it's not to be interfered by other countries.
There's another case that many people around the world follow of Darfur Sudan in Africa. Now, a lot of people say, of course, China has a formal non-interference policy, but by doing very large business with the government of Sudan, by providing military equipment for Sudan, they say, in fact, China is intervening. It has an important role in Sudan, where there has been, many people have said, a genocide going on for some years now. Isn't that a kind of interference, even if the formal policy is otherwise?
We don't know the real intention of the trade of military of Chinese government to Darfur government. Or to
maybe
Sudan,
it's to secure oil, but still, maybe. But wouldn't that still be a kind of interference? Just by the size of China's economy, by its resource demands, by its willingness to do business with that government, even when there's a genocide going on, isn't that a kind of interference?
Maybe we think it's the stability came from the government of Sudan.
Stability. But what if the stability includes genocide?
There were two sides in Darfur problems, and only when two sides peacefully deal with the question, or one side pray over the situation.
Anita, what do you think China's impact will be as it rises into greater power in the world?
Well, I see the three superpower nation or organization.
You said U.S., Europe, China.
Yeah, because I think to some extent they can represent the benefits of different country of different area. And I think, to me, I think it's inevitable for one superpower nation to bring influence to other nations, especially nations just beside it.
So what will the influence of China be?
Maybe in the trade, maybe in the economic growth, maybe in some financial aid.
But what about politically? Henry said sort of critically that the U.S. pushes democracy or pushes other agendas. What do you think China's political influence will be? Will it be anti-democratic? Will it be against democracy?
Well, I think that's not the problem, because I think to Chinese students or to Chinese people now, the problem with America is that he used just a single diplomatic way to do things. So we gave it like a global policeman. And because it represents a single opinion, so it cannot convince a lot of people, especially those nations who are against the United States. So I think, including the Europe and China, they can represent different voice.
Zhang Ying in Beijing, do you think then perhaps that the rise of Chinese power will mean diminished American power in the world?
No,
is
I
it already?
So. No, I don't think so. Well, I think China will continue to rise economically, but I don't think I cannot see that one day China per GDP per capita can be more than America's. I think China's economic growth is just on the way of on the way to the better living conditions or for China standard. The problem is, I think maybe the rising China may cause an inconvenience for other countries. That is, I think the outside world should learn to respect a different model. I see China's rising and China's growth. Maybe someday we can call it Chinese model. And
would that be a communist market one-party model?
It may now be, I think. It will evolve towards democracy, but I don't think the foreigners can expect it to be identical as the Western democratic system. China is too huge to be a copycat.
Chungking, let me ask you, Henry mentioned about, or Anita said, America is seen by some Chinese as a world policeman. Of course, the United States is very involved right now in war in Iraq. Mm-hmm. Sitting in Beijing, what do you make of that war and the American involvement there as a young Chinese with a big view of the world?
Well, my personal understanding of Iraq war is American has some. I think the Bush administration has their moral saying that the Saddam Hussein is a tyrant, or Saddam Hussein does not treat the Iraqi people good well enough. But the interference of other countries, I think many Chinese may perceive that as invasion because of the historical. Of the historical reasons, China used to be a country that was invaded by many foreign countries. So I think in Chinese psychology, it's very easy to revoke that kind of memory.
And Joy Lee with us here in Shanghai, let me turn to you for a moment. We were talking earlier today about a term in China now. You've got the pronunciation better than me, but Feng Qing.
Yes.
Meaning angry youth, but this is a well-known phrase for a well-known dynamic. What does it describe, this the angry youth syndrome in China, or the angry youth group? Who is that? What is that?
The original angry youth usually means, you know, the people, the young people, they are idealistic, so they are really criticize some issues.
But who are they angry with? Are they angry with Chinese leadership? Are they angry with foreigners? Are they angry with
At the beginning, I think they are angry. They are usually well educated, so they're angry at some domestic issues. But lately, recently, the anger has expanded to international countries, including Japan and including the recent the Tibet protests. All this in San Francisco.
In other words, anger against the protests abroad in support of Tibet. Anita, we were looking at some online posts earlier today from this Feng Qing group, angry youth, very angry indeed. I mean, these are young Chinese, it seemed to me, very nationalistic, very angry with the way the outside world is, in their view, treating China. What's going on there? What drives that anger? China looks very successful. Why so much anger?
You mean the anger to the nation, to China?
Well, I see that from what I can see, that the so-called this angry youth phenomenon, the anger is directed more at not at Chinese, but at other countries outside China. Why?
Now there's a heated debate over like some to the Tibet issue. Some Western European and American, like CNN. They use the photos. Actually, they are Nepal policemen, Nepal policemen to replace the Tibet policemen.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
How do you know?
Well, this.
Do you have a free press in this country that can assure you that you know?
Well, this is something like many students or many Chinese media. Maybe just the non-people, they place such from the cutted newspaper and from the Western internet, and to compare the uniform and font difference, and to combine the color of the skin, so this can be a policeman of China. Mm. So this actually irritated many Chinese people.
Henry, what do you make of this angry youth phenomenon? Who is this group? Does it include you or friends that you have? Is it common in at your school?
Not really. I have an example for an underground station of Bremen in Germany. In Germany.
An underground subway station there?
Yeah, there is a post, in the Coca-Cola post.
Poster?
There's a monk crying out, and the word is, the phrase is, make it real. What is it? What does it mean? What is it dedicate? I don't know. So we are all angry with it. So we think that the outside world is troubling China.
Troubling China? Why would it want to do that? Zheng Ying in Beijing?
Yes. I think being angry at misunderstanding cannot say... if you are angry about misunderstanding, I don't say that people is an angry youth. It's a fenqing. I think maybe people say they air their opinions on the internet, and sometimes people behave different in the cyberspace. So
we see this in the United States also. Yeah,
yes,
the passions run higher, emotions are higher.
When they say they are extremely angry and they complain about a current situation, that does not necessarily mean they are against the situation, and they are not they have their real life that's in the cyberspace. So I think the impact of angry youth is substantially overestimated.
Let's turn it the other way and look at American politics. Do you follow the presidential campaign in the United States at all, Henry?
We know something about it. It's in the primary turn of Democrats and the Eagle.
I heard you saying earlier that you had been a Hillary Clinton supporter.
I had been, but
why Hillary? Why not Barack? Or why not John McCain?
Because I have read a book of Bill Clinton, so I thought a couple much, and now. Hillary Clinton has made remarks of him. She's kind of proposing a boycott for the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games. So I am angry with her.
Anita, do you think, you know, the United States is a big power and it has a history of pushing its views in the world? The Americans would say very often pushing for democracy, though it's complicated, and we know that. Do you fear at all the future of this relationship, the United States and China? Do you fear conflict?
Conflict. Well, personally, I think this will be alleviated if China gains more power, because now they are at a more equal position, so they can talk more like equally.
Joy, you know, right now the United States already owes China a lot of money. China holds a lot of American debt. You know, do you hear a conversation that says, well, you know, China already has a lot of power because America owes it, what, something like, I'm not sure, $1 trillion. It's a lot.
Right, but that, just like before, Japan owes a lot of money. You know, America owes Japan a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But I think... we also understand if we pull out all those debt, it will affect the world economy. But I feel like the reason I feel like I don't understand why, you know, Americans always talk about superpower. But personally, I really don't like the word superpower.
Why not?
Why people, you know, the country wants to be a superpower?
Does China want to be a superpower? It wants to be so powerful, as Henry said, that it can protect its independence against any threat, and maybe more than that. Do you think China wants to be a superpower?
I think economically, if China becomes a superpower, will, you know, benefit of the Chinese will benefit from that, but also the rest of the world will benefit from that as well. Personally, I don't want to any country become like superpower, then, you know, replace the other one, become the police of the world, I think.
Zheng Ying, what do you think? If we have a rising superpower here and one or two others already at the table, do you see conflict as possible, as inevitable? How do you see the path forward?
I personally, I'm a supporter of the interdependence theory, so I don't think conflict is inevitable. I think, as you mentioned, China is holding huge debt of American people, but on the other hand, China is holding large foreign currency reserve. Most of it is in U.S. dollar. So. Mm-hmm. In the if you see from a different angle, China is relying on a strong American economy, right? So I don't think I think there are common interests, and a conflict between this country can be disastrous for both countries. So if the leadership from both sides understand this, conflicts is by no means inevitable.
We could talk on and on, but I'm afraid we're out of time. Zhang Ying in Beijing, Henry Fu with me in Shanghai, Anita Wong and Joy Lily. Thank you to all of you for being here. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
We'll go out with one more song. It's called Chinese Language by the Taiwanese girl group, very popular in China, SHE. The whole world is learning Chinese, their lyrics go. Confucius words are becoming world culture. Our language makes the people of the world listen up. I'm Tom Ashbrook in Shanghai. This is On Point.